Hey, quick question. Have you read the new Hunger Games? Spoiler alert, I haven't either. Today, I'm talking about The Loop by Ben Oliver. This is Exploring Tomorrow. I wanted to dive into a few things that I've been reading lately. So in this episode, we're going to talk about a novel, The Loop, and a couple of graphic novels that I read recently that are either science fiction or science fiction adjacent or within the broader spectrum of speculative fiction, I would say. But first, I want to dive into The Loop, or this book by Ben Oliver that, according to several reviews I've seen on Goodreads, is apparently, being hailed as the new Hunger Games. Oh, yes, before I go on, I should probably be sure to tell you I'm going to spoil this book. So if you care, go check it out first. But maybe don't. It's a somewhat not far into the future, but definitely several decades into the future, dystopian novel with a young cast focused on, the teenage characters. So it kind of fits that bill of, it's young adult fiction and has those sort of common themes of overcoming the system and dealing with this dystopian landscape. Now, it has an interesting premise, which is why I picked it up and was like, okay, what is this? I'll check it out. I didn't know anything about it when I first came across it and thought I would give it a read. The Loop is actually a prison for young delinquents, and it's run by an artificial intelligent system, this machine that takes care of really well, takes care is kind of a that's not even generous, it's just mischaracterizing really what it's doing. It really keeps these teenagers all in solitary confinement and provides them with food. And kind of what they need to exist. They get like an hour of being outside, but they're essentially solitary because they have their own sort of wedge in this big circle that's walled off, and they can walk around and do all their exercising or just sit there. They're able to talk for that hour across the walls and stuff, but they can't get out, and they really can't have any human contact. So it really is this cruel isolation. And every night they have to take part in something called the harvest. It's the artificial intelligent machines, basically. It's actually not explained very clearly in the book, but somehow extract energy from each prisoner. And it's a very torturous, like horrible experience for these 6 hours. And that's how the loop is powered. It's powered by sapping the energy out of these human beings, these young human beings, and essentially using them as batteries. Sound familiar? Yeah, that's right. It's a direct lift out of the Matrix. Everything else about the Matrix is so slick and cool and effective that we can overlook this incredibly implausible and honestly stupid idea. And but so the fact that Ben Oliver chose to recycle that idea into this and didn't provide any further provided even less plausibility actually for the scenario is kind of frustrating. And spoiler alert, certainly, at least in the first book, and this appears to be, it's going to be a trilogy. The other books aren't out yet, but it's going to at least be a trilogy. But at least in the first book, there's no answer into, what exactly the harvest really is, or even, and here's the issue that I also have with it, is it's not even questioned by anyone, which lends a bit of, I don't know, it's a little troubling that none of these otherwise seemingly intelligent characters at any point raise a question of like, hey, you know, seems like human beings would be a really terrible, like, source of energy. And what's really frustrating about it too, in this post-apocalyptic scenario, you don't even have the scorched, blackened sky that you have in the Matrix, to justify this whole sense of, well, you know, the AI can't just like put up solar panels, you know? So it just seems like, wow, really? It seems like really inefficient. You got to feed all these people and give them water and make sure that in general, they like stay relatively healthy, that they can be of use as a battery. Seems like all of that expenditure of energy would far exceed anything you could potentially pull out of a human being. Not to mention, it's not really explained how to do it. Now, why am I picking on some of these things, and why am I willing to review this book that I'm obviously kind of frustrated with? Isn't my whole deal all about meaningful science fiction? Well, yeah, it is. And here's the thing. To really make meaningful science fiction, I think first we have to make good science fiction. And I wanted to like The Loop. I really did. I was initially really into it, really intrigued by what was going on. The setup is good. The book is fast-paced. It's entertaining and relatively easy to read. I breezed through it pretty quick. And on all those counts, like, you know, I can recommend it. It's a fairly entertaining read. But does it succeed as really being meaningful science fiction? Not really. Because at the end of the day, it's not good science fiction. Not only do we have these problems with these sort of central concepts in the book, there are several points where just sort of general, fairly easily fact-checkable science starts to go out the window. A character gets their arm cut off, and our main character is desperately trying to help them and find a means to stop the bleeding. And a lot of time transpires between when this character loses their arm and when the main character is actually finally able to tourniquet off the arm. And, you know, maybe you know, the average young adult reader hasn't like really understood the reality of what happens when you lose a limb, and they'll buy it. But for me, reading it, I definitely was like, okay, it's been 15, maybe going on 20 minutes now since that limb came off. That person's dead, 100% dead. I don't care what human augmentation they have. They lost a limb. And they're bleeding out freely, and the body just cannot stay functioning with that much blood loss for that long. So it's just like simple things like that. There's a reference later to how they're in this tank that has a gravity engine. So the only sound is the treads going on the ground. I'm like, what the hell? If it has a gravity engine that somehow... first of all, what the hell is a gravity engine? No explanation of what the hell that is. Two, if it has something called a gravity engine, why isn't it just floating? Why isn't it a flying tank? Why does it need to have treads at all? These little things like this are indicative of not thinking through the broader... the details and the broader issues at hand. And sure enough, as I was picking up on these things, I became a little more skeptical of where the book was going to go. I was hoping I could land at a 3 by the end of the book, but honestly, by the time I closed, read the last page and closed the book, I was like, nah, that's a solid 2 out of 5 stars on Goodreads. Because ultimately, there's just so many things that plot-wise and character-wise don't really seem to make sense. Even understanding and appreciating that there are more books to come. Things, you know, around the plausibility of a prison that has a warden that's 19, apparently. And so you got prisoners that are like 17 and younger. They're, you know, as soon as they turn 18, they're out of the loop and sent to the block instead, a prison for adults. But who puts a 19-year-old in charge of a bunch of prisoners, you know? That was like also just incredibly bizarre. And then the way the world building ultimately plays out, it's, you know, indicative of this kind of, we're just going to jump across big logical leaps, you know. So a tank can have something called a gravity engine, and this world can have apparently these massive skyscrapers that people live in, and all this human augmentation, all this technology, and still somehow like people are just like vanishing out of that world. Everybody has these like basically little cameras on their foreheads that can record everything that's happening. And it's like, how did this exactly come about? It's, you know, there's this somewhat like vague backstory of a sort of World War III scenario, and then a one world government kind of banding together, and then the AI kind of becoming quite powerful. But it ultimately feels like just a convenient backdrop to make all this action take place, and then ultimately have an unsatisfying ending, really, as a book. I get that Ben Oliver's like setting it up for a sequel, and to do this whole trilogy thing, and so naturally, you know, spoiler alert, you know, if you're going to have the loop and they're talking about the block, then we got to have one called The Block. And we are, you know, you can just go on Goodreads and see that book 2 is coming out later this year, and it's called The Block. So hate to spoil it for you, but yeah, he doesn't get out. But there's just like, there's some interesting moments where the characters connect and there's some good things going on, but then there's just like things that get thrown away that are important plot points in the story, and then they just kind of seemingly get resolved. And that's the kind of like, that's like the plot version of fuck it, it's got a gravity engine. And it's lazy, and I don't mean to, like, I don't like disparaging a fellow author's work. It's just that, wow, I'm kind of blown away by all the good reviews the book's getting on Goodreads, and the claims that it's like the next Hunger Games. And I'm like, the Hunger Games is a lot better world building and a lot better character development than this, and the plot's a lot more logical and coherent and consistent without these sort of lazy devices like that. There's a sense in which even if the first Hunger Games book were to be it, like the only thing you ever read, there is a sense in which, like, yes, this world's going to continue, and clearly there's a whole new, bigger journey that Katniss Everdeen's going to take on in terms of like taking on the capital. But as far as a story, it feels very satisfying and has a conclusion. It has a very real character arc for Katniss. I did not feel that was the case with the main character in the loop, Luca, is his name. Even though I liked the themes, the ideas of isolation, the ideas of that Oliver plays with around how these characters manage to connect, the idea of how do you cope with an utterly hopeless situation, and you know, because the other thing is these teenagers that are being held captive, these supposedly criminal teenagers, they're also the subjects of these experiments that are being done that, you know, basically you get to trial all the new human augmentation technology and all that kind of stuff on these, you know, willing or unwilling test subjects. And really, I mean, their dichotomy, their choice is between, do you choose to die? Or you choose the delay, as they call it, and you just, you know, carte blanche, just say, yeah, I don't want to die. I don't want to go off to be executed. So do with me whatever you want, which may still result in my death because you may do some horrible experiment on me that fails miserably and I die anyway. But that's like the choice that these characters are given. And I like stories that confront isolation, confront hopelessness, and then figure out ways to really embody those in new ways and dissect that and walk us through that and give us a new perspective on those topics. And in that sense, like, there was so much potential within the loop to be some really meaningful science fiction and to help us think about some of these themes, especially for young adults, be thinking about themes of isolation in an age in which we are increasingly isolated thanks to our use of technology. Like, we're increasingly connected and isolated at the same time, in terms of like real human face-to-face contact a lot of ways. And so there's some pluses and minuses there. And of course, we're also living in a world with a pandemic that doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon, in spite of all of our half-assed efforts. And so isolation is kind of an important theme right now. It's a valuable theme. And as such, like, I have high hopes for that kind of storytelling. And ultimately, I just can't really recommend The Loop because it just doesn't live up to it. It's kind of vaguely interesting. And, you know, they have like that level of morbid curiosity where maybe I'd like to see where it ends up going. Does it redeem itself? You know, it's kind of one of those things where you're like watching the first season of a show and you're like, there's some cool ideas here. And the characters are kind of interesting, but I don't really love it. But you're kind of like, oh, I wonder if it gets better in season two. So maybe down the road, I'm probably not going to jump on the block right away. But maybe down the road, just out of morbid curiosity, I might pick it up. But I suspect it very well may be also the kind of book that I pick up, read half of it and go, yeah, this doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And set aside, because my time is actually pretty precious to me as a full-time employed person, parent, and author myself. Which is why I value, I think, like, I don't like really like disparaging other authors' work. At the same time, it's like, man, our time is valuable. So like, do something with it. Like, really invest in building a world that's coherent. And if you're gonna venture into this like futuristic sci-fi world, just do a little bit of homework. Give me some plausibility. I'm willing to suspend disbelief. But you know, like, work with me, meet me halfway. And if just, especially during the last half of The Loop, I really felt like I wasn't being met halfway in those ways. At that point, I think I was just, as a reader, expected to be like, I just want to know what happens next, you know, and not even really care about the logic of a lot of things, which is unfortunate, because ultimately the big climax of the book doesn't strike me as logical either. It's like, oh, well, that's really convenient. And it becomes this like epic battle conveniently that then transforms into info dump at the end, so we can get some answers to some questions, and then set everything up for book two. And it's just like, you know, that's not satisfying storytelling to me. But look, all that to say, Ben Oliver, you are a good writer, and you wrote a really entertaining book. So I'd be willing to check something else out. But for me, The Loop, unfortunately, 2 stars out of 5. Now, I mentioned I've also recently read a couple of graphic novels that I wanted to throw out there and mention as well. And thankfully, I can definitely give these a much higher rating and a more enthusiastic recommendation. These are, you know, graphic novels, so they're fairly quick reads. Like, you know, you can breeze through it pretty quick. First, I want to mention Moon Cop by Tom Gold. It's a really like minimalist, beautiful graphic novel set somewhere in the future. People are living on the moon. And you know what's interesting is it was a good follow-up to The Loop, to reading The Loop, because it too has this theme of isolation in it. And so you've got this lone, he's like literally the only cop on the moon, and he's just, you know, kind of doing his job, literally doesn't have like much to do because of the people living on the moon. First, there's not a huge population. Two, there really is no crime. The people living up there are not prone to crime and conflict and such. And so most of what he's doing is he helps a lady look for her lost dog. I'll let you go check out how that's plausibly worked out, living on the moon. But I thought it was like, you know, I hesitate to say that the it's a cute graphic novel, but it is in a sense, but in the best way possible, and still a meaningful and entertaining and heartbreaking way in a lot of ways too, because of it dealing with this whole concept of isolation and the need for human connection, the need for community and purpose. And so it's because I recommend it, I don't want to like give too much away other than to say, look, you can read this in like 15 minutes. If you can find it somewhere, Moon Cop, I highly recommend it. It's just, it's a nice refresher with some really cool visuals. And I quickly connected with the main character and just the general atmosphere and vibe and meaning behind this quest for connection that exists within the story. So very cool, very worthwhile, very quick read. The other graphic novel I wanted to mention as well is, and this is, as I sort of prefaced at the beginning, say a science fiction adjacent. It's not exactly science fiction, not really science fiction actually at all. But it is, I would say, superhero stories are within generally the speculative fiction realm. They may be, some may be closer to fantasy than science fiction. And this would probably be closer to fantasy. It's a graphic novel called Wonder Woman Tempest Tossed by Laurie Halson Anderson. I like the Wonder Woman character, and especially in light of the new Wonder Woman movie being out, I, you know, was like, oh yeah, I want to go back and check out more of the comics and graphic novels around this character, because I think this is a fascinating character. And I came across this particular book, this graphic novel, Tempest Tossed. And I was very intrigued. I was like, okay, this looks very different. And in short, what makes this story different is it's a reimagining of Wonder Woman entering into our world from Themyscira as a 16-year-old refugee. And as such, it's just got this very different tone and this coming-of-age story to it. And it's just got a very relevant story to our moment that we're in right now, historically, as we, you know, not just in the United States, but around the globe, deal with questions of refugees and what do we do? How do we see refugees? And how do we treat our fellow human beings who are fleeing from violent conflict? And I found it just really well told, really well put together, and really beautiful art. And just a very, it was cool because it was like a very different way of looking at Wonder Woman. But it still felt familiar. It was still like, yeah, that's Diana, you know, maybe she's this is a different iteration, a different universe in some ways. But that's Diana. Yep. I recognize her. And I thought it was just really cool. It's a standalone graphic novel, as far as I know. I don't think there are any others quite like it. It tells its story very well without any wasted time or any random tangents. It really does a great job of fleshing out how Diana begins to... who first enters our world, and then how she begins to really grapple with her identity and her purpose and what she might be able to do in this world, as she feels like an outcast, you know, that reality of, I think that we often overlook of the refugee experience of having had to abandon one's home and now try to make a whole new life in a different world that you didn't necessarily choose to exist in. And you have to figure out who you are in this whole new context. I connect to it personally because, I grew up in South America, in Brazil, where I was born. And my parents are Americans and they were missionaries there. And then I was, taken out of that context and brought to the United States, in my, sort of tween years, early teens. So I relate, there's a visceral level in which I connect with the journey that this iteration of Diana is in Tempest Tossed, because I was, a bit younger than her when I was not a refugee, but I was transplanted and tossed, into a completely new context and had to wrestle through a lot of the same, where do I fit in sort of questions in my mind. And it's who am I in this new world, in this new context? So for very personal reasons, I think I found it very compelling. But I think, again, that kind of story is important at this point in our history because we need more ability to connect with those we see as the other, to empathize with those who are fleeing from horrible situations in many cases and seeking a better life. And those who manage to make it to, a better context, but then the continued struggle that exists with fitting in and being part of a new society, a new community, and grappling with identity. It's all very complex stuff. And certainly the book and graphic novel doesn't cover it all. But the fact that it's using that as this interesting, beautiful context to set up Diana as a character is really quite compelling. And what's interesting is to read that with that context and then be like, yeah, imagine now who is Diana as an adult and how this background could inform her present is pretty fascinating. So I highly recommend it. That one, I actually give 5 stars. Like, I just loved it. It was fantastic. And well told, beautiful art, beautiful writing, and just a meaningful, compelling story. A true example of being able to take something that could be a very tired, very saturated story with one of these characters that so much has been done with already. And it's like, oh, actually, here is a fresh angle. So that was really cool, really refreshing. And on the whole, better writing than the recent Wonder Woman sequel. I enjoyed that one on its own terms, but it's got some serious plot holes and whatnot. But I'm not reviewing that today, so we'll leave it at that. Before I close out this episode, I did want to take a moment to talk about something that I'm really excited about. So coming up in a couple weeks on the 25th of February at 7 p.m. On Eastern time out here in the Boston area, I'm going to be part of a local author's event. It'll be all done remote. It's still not quite there where we can be meeting in person, but I'm very excited to be able to meet some other authors. Actually, a good friend of mine and a fellow author, Kimberly Meyer, has helped set up this local author event through the Thomas Crane Public Library in Quincy, Massachusetts, which is really pretty close to me. We get to talk a bit about our books and do a little reading and just interact and learn about each other and connect, hopefully, with readers around the area. So I'll post a link below because it's definitely something I'm excited to do. I haven't had a chance, especially since the pandemic has hit, to get out and do things like author events and book signings. And those kinds of things are just really valuable for connecting with readers. And, as an indie author without a marketing budget, like that's kind of, kind of important to be able to do those things and kind of important to make those connections and grow the audience. But also, you want to find the right audience. You want to find people that you can connect with people and be able to share a story that they're going to find meaningful as well. And also just because I'm a total book nerd anyway, and spoiler alert, I'm pretty serious book nerd to the point where I read a lot more than just science fiction, even though this podcast is only about science fiction. I'm pretty excited about checking out these books by these other authors and learning about them and their stories, their backgrounds. So there's going to be a little, it's not all science fiction. So there's going to be a little something for everyone in there. So I encourage you to check that out. Check out the link below. You'll be able to stream it live. And I do believe they'll make it available for watching afterwards if you want to check it out at some point after the fact, if you're not able to join on the 25th of February at 7 p.m. Eastern time. But I do encourage you to check it out and support that. And in the process, you're not just supporting me, you're supporting other authors as well, which is really cool and something I enjoy doing as well. So thank you so much for coming along for this journey. Hopefully you found this episode and my dissection of The Loop and other things entertaining, interesting. Let me know what your thoughts are. Have you read The Loop, actually? What did you think? I would love to hear if you've checked it out. Do you think I'm crazy and, I'm like, oh, dude, you're on crack. Like, the book's actually really good. I welcome that. I love a good discussion and exploration of what connects and what doesn't, whether a plot is plausible or not. Feel free to comment if you've read or if you are like, ooh, you know, found your review helpful. Thanks. Any of that's helpful. And wherever you grab this podcast, please hit subscribe. And that way you can keep up to date on latest episodes that I'm releasing generally on a weekly basis. And be abreast of other events and things like that that I'm getting to be part of. So thank you so much for checking this out. Be safe. Be well. Keep asking big questions. We'll see you soon.